Football Weekly is on the air.
This is Wayne Larrivee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, we break down each pick in the first round of the 2013 NFL Draft.
Did the Bills and the Bears reach too far? Were the 49ers and the Vikings the luckiest teams in the first round?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. And with us in studio is publisher and editor Hub Arkish, and also joining us, senior editor Eric Edholm. Due to the taping of this program, we are going to dissect on this draft weekend the first round of the NFL draft as the teams got started with the college lottery. When you look at it, guys, this was the first round of the big uglies. 10 of the first 14 picks, 14 of 17 total, were either offensive or defensive linemen. Just one quarterback taken to the first round of the draft and no running backs. And Hub, let's start with you. That's just an unusual draft.
It is, Wayne, but I think a lot of us felt that could happen coming in. We knew where the best prospects were. We knew the depth was on the offensive and defensive lines. I think the thing that really stunned me about the first round was the number of teams drafting athletes instead of football players, which I believe is a recipe for disaster. But, you know, even in the first two picks, there's no question that Jokel and Fisher were the first two picks. I think they're both going to be good football players. But you got a choice between the dominating left tackle from the SEC and the outstanding athlete and developmental player from the MAC, and you take Fisher over Jokel. I don't know if I buy that. And then the Dolphins at number 3 with Deion Jordan, the Lions at number 5 with Ziggy Ansah. The Chicago Bears at number 20 took a player with 4 starts in FBS football. I mean, and yeah, these guys are great athletes. They may be great players, but as I said, you know, Eric, historically, that doesn't usually work.
Yeah, and that's why when I look at this draft, I look at picks 11 through 20, guys like DJ Fluker, DJ Hayden, Shel Richardson, I think is going to be a good football player, Starlo Tulele, you know, a couple other good ones down the line, but boy, I actually like picks 21 through 30 a lot better than 11 through 20. I thought the back half of the first round, with contenders really stocking up on good players, that's where the mean potatoes for me was, and I actually think the second round may end up being just as fruitful as the first, so it seemed like the rich almost got richer in this draft, and the guys at the top kind of got stuck a little bit with players that they liked but maybe didn't love.
With the first pick in the 2013 NFL draft, the Kansas City Chiefs select Eric Fisher, tackle, Central Michigan.
All right, guys, let's break this down a little bit now. The Kansas City Chiefs took almost every second of the 10 minutes they were allotted to make this pick. Were they trying to trade out of this from what you guys have heard?
Yeah, there's no question. They knew it was Fisher if they were going to use the pick. They had decided that really on Wednesday before the draft. But they were hoping that they'd get an offer that would blow them away, maybe just to go down 3, 4, 5 spots. Again, Brandon Albert trade has not happened as we tape this show. Everybody assumes. And I don't know that it's going to happen with the Dolphins because they gave up that 42nd pick that the Chiefs were waiting for. So I think they tried to make a trade. They couldn't. They decided Fisher was the guy, Eric, and they went for it.
Yeah, and I think the scouts liked Fisher better, whereas the coaching staff may have felt a little more comfortable with Jokel, big school kid, you know, maybe a little bit safer pick at this point. Coaching staff, however, got outruled in this one. The front office decided to make the pick for Fisher.
You know, the third pick of the draft, Jacksonville takes Luke Jokel after Kansas City grabs Eric Fisher. Oakland then trades with Miami, and Miami selects Deion Jordan, the defensive end out of Oregon. And Hub, you know, first off, Oakland, everybody had them painted into a defensive tackle with this pick, Sharif Floyd. Floyd would eventually fall all the way to 23, where the Minnesota Vikings grabbed him. But talk a little bit about this. Were you surprised Reggie McKenzie traded out of this pick?
Well, I wasn't surprised, and I liked what he did when he did it, because this is a guy who's had to sit on the sidelines the last couple of years because of the horrible shape that Al Davis and Hugh Jackson left that ball club in when Reggie McKenzie took over. So to parlay the third round pick into what is still, you know, a top 15 pick, you're going down number 12, but you're adding a second round pick. That part of it I liked, particularly with the depth on the defensive line where their need was. Now, we'll talk about what they did in a segment or two, but then I look at the Miami Dolphins, Eric, and, you know, Jeff Ireland has become a bit of a lightning rod around the NFL, yeah. And particularly with Dolphin fans. He's had a big offseason in free agency, didn't get the Albert trade done. Now, he comes up, makes a bold move, gives up a pick that he may have needed to get his left tackle, and he takes this project in Deion Jordan. Now, Deion Jordan may be the next Jason Taylor. That's the body type you've got here. But this kid is clearly a developmental project, and to give up the assets you did, knowing where your team is at, trying to contend right now, I didn't like this pick at number three.
Yeah, I thought the theme of the draft became evident right away. Obviously, blockers and pass rushers, that was sort of the theme throughout the night. And I believe Ireland wants to get his, you know, Jason Taylor, his Alden Smith, his electric edge rusher to put opposite Cameron Wake to maybe only use 500 to 600 snaps a year, you know, save him up for those key passing downs. So, like you said, this is a risk, and this is a bold, bold move. Now, they still have that number 54 pick. We'll have to see whether they can get their offensive tackle either by trade or somewhere in the second round.
Meanwhile, fourth pick in the first round of the draft, Philadelphia, Lane Johnson, offensive tackle, Oklahoma. Hub, a solid pick here?
It's a solid pick, Wayne. And I got to tell you on this one, though, we continue to talk about athletes, and I think everybody agreed that Lane Johnson is a freak of an athlete. He's a 300-pounder who ran a 4.7 40-yard dash. It just doesn't happen. He's a guy who started as a quarterback and eventually ended up as an offensive tackle. What I at least understand about this, though, is that he had a pretty good career as a blocker at Oklahoma. You knew he was going to be a top 6 or 7 pick, and he was, you know, going to come off somewhere between 4 and 8. So at least he fits a little bit better in this spot.
We'll be back with more details on the first round of the 2013 NFL Draft when Pro Football Weekly continues.
With the fifth pick of the 2013 NFL Draft, the Detroit Lions select Ezekiel Ansah, defensive end, BYU.
Lions Hall of Famer Barry Sanders, who the announcement, the fifth pick in the draft, Ziggy Ansah, the defensive end out of BYU, born and raised in Ghana, hasn't played football a whole lot, Hub. He grew up, you know, playing soccer in his home country, also basketball. Twice he tried to walk onto the BYU basketball team, didn't make it, and then moved over to the football field where it was a life changer for him.
Well, and again, Wayne, this is what we talked about in the opener, what I talked about in the open, and this was not a surprise. Almost every mock draft I saw had Ziggy Ansah going somewhere between 4 and 8, 4 and 10. He is that kind of a freak as an athlete, and at least with the better part of 2 seasons at BYU, he started to learn the game, and he showed some real instincts for it on the football field. So I can't, Eric, jump all over the Lions and say this is a horrible pick. My concern is that when you've got these rare top 5 picks, you've got to get a surefire 10-year starter. And Ziggy Ansah could spend the next 2-3 years learning the NFL game and never become the player that matches up with the kind of athlete he is. On the other hand, you may have a perennial All-Pro.
Yeah, this is a guy who wasn't even on scouts radar until the beginning of the season. I mean, he did not play at all, basically, the year before. So a shocker in terms of 1 year ago to now. They also couldn't get a left tackle. You know, Jeff Backus retired. You've got Riley Reiff, their first rounder from last year. You know, probably going to have to be your left tackle this season. You lose Coster, Chairless, and free agency. All of a sudden, you've got some holes on the offensive line, and you've got to protect Matthew Stafford, number one.
And, guys, I think Jason Pierre-Paul is why Ziggy Ansah is the fifth pick in this draft. That's what they're counting on him becoming. Whether that happens or not, only time will tell. Cleveland Browns, a Barcavius Mingo, defensive end, outside linebacker, LSU, goes 6'4 and a quarter, 241, Hub.
Well, and I love this pick because it's much a marketing move as it is a football player. Imagine how Barkevious is going to play in the dog pound in Cleveland. One of the great NFL names of all time. And again, to me, a bit of a reach up here, but a more productive football player at LSU, at one of the big time factories. He was a big play guy, Eric, is a big play guy, I should say. I don't know if he projects size and frame wise to the defensive end spot in a 4-3 defense in the NFL, but at least you've got a little bit more football production with the number 6 pick.
Right, and with them switching over to a 3-4, he can play that edge spot. Doesn't have to be counted on for 1,000 snaps a year. I do worry, though, at almost 6'5", 240 pounds, some say his frame is almost maxed out. So is this kid going to grow and take on more than 5 or 10 pounds? I doubt it. That said, electric rusher still raw. You know, it just so happens that Cleveland's biggest needs didn't really match up with what was available in the draft. Their strengths were offensive and defensive line. Those were the best players available at this spot.
And fellas, the first interior offensive lineman, Jonathan Cooper, comes off the board. He goes to Arizona out of North Carolina.
Maybe the safest pick in the draft, the most logical pick I've seen so far. And Wayne, all I hear from scouts is future Hall of Famer. I mean, you know, this kid, they come along. Well, I think the last time a guard was drafted in the top 10 was 1994 or something like that. So they come around, you know, once every 15, 20 years. There was two of them in this draft, and he's one of them. And if the Cardinals had done anything else, Eric, I would have fired every new employee they have in that personnel department.
Right. And I think Bruce Arians knows the importance of a great offensive line. That's going to help him out there. The great thing about Cooper, too, is that, you know, in a couple of years, he could switch to center and be even better at that position. So I love the choice. I know people aren't thinking guard is very sexy, but this is a guy who could be a Pro Bowl or two different spots.
You know, Buffalo is up next at number 8, and everyone's expecting, okay, they're going to make the bold pick, and they're going to take Ryan Nassib to follow Marone from Syracuse over to Buffalo. Well, Buffalo decides that what most people said they should do, if they're going to pick a quarterback, don't pick him number 8. Trade back. That's exactly what they do. They work a trade. St. Louis moves up and takes Tavian Austin, the diminutive wide receiver out of West Virginia, Geno Smith's top target.
You know, I love what Buffalo did here. Now, a lot of people think they should have held out for both of St. Louis's number ones, but they got a 1 and a 2, and some extra, depth elsewhere, and they moved back. We'll talk about what they did a little later. Tavian Austin is universally regarded as the biggest impact guy in this draft. I don't like 175-pounders in the NFL. He was sturdy and durable at West Virginia. My concern, they compare him to Percy Harvin. Well, don't forget, Percy Harvin didn't handle the beating very well in Minnesota. We'll see how Austin does in St. Louis.
Yeah, and if you restrict him to sort of 12 to 13 touches a game, end arounds, catches, returns, et cetera, I think he can be okay. They lose Danny Amendola. The pressure's on Sam Bradford, guys. He's got to perform this season in a jacked-up NFC West all of a sudden.
Meanwhile, the 9th pick of the first round of the draft, the New York Jets replaced Darrell Revis with D. Milliner, the cornerback out of Alabama.
You know, Wayne, I'll jump on the next two picks here. D. Milliner with the Jets at 9, and then Chance Warmack with the Titans at 10. These are both, to me, purely logical picks. Both players were better than the 9th and 10th best player in this draft. I think you lose Darrell Revis, you plug in Milliner right away, and you save about $50 million against your cap over the next couple of years. And Chance Warmack, much like Jonathan Cooper, a Hall of Fame-type prospect. Eric, it was 11 that stopped me a little bit. I know the Chargers wanted offensive line, but DJ Fluker, I think he's a right tackle, and they were looking for a guy to play on the left.
That's exactly what he is. I mean, I suppose he could be a right guard in a power-based system, but they probably have to stick him at right tackle. It's the best they could do, kind of a bad run, bad stroke of luck ahead of him. But, you know, looking at that situation, I think Matt McCoy had to make a move for the offensive line. That's what they did. They're counting on those 37-inch arms to dominate on the right side.
Stay tuned. We've got more first-round analysis of the 2013 NFL Draft when we come back to Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to this NFL Draft Edition of Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkush, the publisher and editor, and senior editor Eric Edholm. Well, the Oakland Raiders, as we told you earlier, moved down to the first round from number 3 to 12 in a trade with Miami. And when the Raiders got to number 12, they decided to take cornerback DJ Hayden, the second cornerback taken in the first round of the draft. Hayden out of Houston, Hub.
You know, Wayne, I mentioned in the first segment, I loved what the Raiders did trading down and picking up the extra pick. But now you've got a situation where what do you do with it? And I didn't like this pick at all. I mean, DJ Hayden is possibly the best story in this draft, maybe the best story in draft history. Just 5 months ago, a freak accident in practice tore a blood vessel at the back of his heart, required emergency surgery, was near death. And so just to be alive and walking today is one thing. To be a first-round pick in the NFL is another. Now, he's an NFL player. There's no question about that. But you go back and look at the tape prior to the injury, he was never one of the top 10, top 15 players in this draft. He maybe is a late first rounder, more likely a second or a third rounder. And here's a team with a screaming need on the defensive line, defensive tackle, the best position in the draft. Every one of them is still there, and they reach up and take the cornerback. I didn't understand this pick at all.
All right, the New York Jets picking 13. This is a pick they obtained from Tampa Bay in the Darrell Revis deal. They decide to continue to restock that defense, Eric, and they select Sheldon Richardson, defensive tackle out of Missouri. A lot of people had him number 1 on their depth charts as far as the draft is concerned, pre-draft, at defensive line.
Well, this is, for me, a case of right player, wrong team. I mean, you won't find too many bigger Sheldon Richardson fans than me out there. Full disclosure, I'm a Missouri grad, but, you know, this past year you saw him stand up and move in a one technique, a zero, a three, a five. He did everything for that defense. And, you know, Rex Ryan had to see that versatility, but taking so many high picks as they have the last couple of years, Muhammad Wilkerson, Quinton Coples on the defensive line, with glaring needs on the offensive side of the ball, playmakers that they have to have on that side to be competitive whatsoever. I just don't get it. Again, love the player, don't love the fit, even though Rex Ryan certainly will try to be creative with Richardson and use him in a lot of different ways.
Another defensive tackle falling in the draft, and two Carolina star, Lotulelei. The defensive tackle out of Utah goes number 14 to Carolina, Hub.
Well, you look here, Wayne, the Carolina Panthers' absolute far and away number one need defensive tackle. Going into the combine, Star Lotulelei was number one player in this draft on a lot of teams' boards. That's how good he was. That's how highly he was thought of. He had the heart issue at the combine. They made him stop working out. They sent him to specialists. He'd been medically cleared to the point where he had moved back into the top 10, top 15 on most lists, but never got back to number one. The Carolina Panthers may very well have gotten the best football player in this draft at 14 at their greatest area of need. That's a huge win.
Finally, the first safety comes off the board. The New Orleans Saints at 15 select Kenny Vaccaro out of Texas. This a playmaker at safety, Eric, in your estimation?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I thought they needed an edge rusher. That was, to me, their biggest need, especially switching to a 3-4. But, you know, they had to find somebody on the back end. It wasn't getting done with the guys they'd had. You know, I think Michael Jenkins is a good but not a great player there, so, or Malcolm Jenkins, I should say. But, you know, Vaccaro, I think, will bring a little extra juice to that position. Now, he's got an edge. He's a cocky kid. I think it's going to show in the way he plays. And, you know, that Saints defense is going to regain the teeth that it lost a couple years ago.
With the 16th pick in the 2013 NFL Draft, the Buffalo Bills select E.J. Manuel, quarterback, Florida State.
This one surprised a lot of people, Hub, when you think about it, because all the talk in Buffalo was of Ryan Nassib, the quarterback out of Syracuse, following his head coach to Buffalo.
You know, Wayne, we actually knew, when I say we, myself and some of the other PFW guys and other media folks I worked with, that if Buffalo took a quarterback, it was going to be Manuel. That kind of began to leak out the week leading up to the draft, that he was the guy they liked the best, that it was not Nassib and it was never Geno Smith. And they did what everybody said they should do in trading down. But Eric, I think they could have traded down again, stockpiled more picks if this is what they were going to do. I think Manuel is the second best quarterback prospect in this draft behind Matt Barkley. He may have the highest ceiling, and we talk so much about ceilings, but at 16, you still didn't get great value for the pick.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's been interesting to listen to Doug Marrone, and I was there at the combine, and I've watched an interview with him both Thursday night after his pick and then Friday morning talking about what they did at quarterback. And number one, he hasn't said a lot of great things about Ryan Nassib, and that surprised me, I think, from the get-go. I thought this is a guy that he at least supported very much and thought could be a good, capable NFL quarterback. Didn't know if they'd take him, but hasn't really been super warm to him, so I don't know if there was something there that prevented him from wanting to take him, but certainly Manuel was their guy. The more tape you watch him, you like him, and then all of a sudden he makes that head-scratching mistake, and you say, who is this guy? So there are a lot of unknowns with him. He is far from a finished product at this point, and I don't know if they're expecting him to step right in, but Kevin Cobb is probably my day one starter.
Stay tuned. Steelers, Niners, and Bears make their picks in the first round, and we break them down when we continue on this first round edition of Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
You are listening to our first round breakdown of the 2013 NFL Draft on Pro Football Weekly, along with the publisher and editor Hub Arkish and senior editor Eric Edholm. I'm Wayne Larrabee. Well, when you take a look at this draft as it wound into deeper into the first round of the draft, you move up to the Pittsburgh Steelers at number 17. They go for an outside linebacker out of Georgia by the name of Jarvis Jones. Eric, what do you make of this pick?
Well, the reason that Jones wasn't a top five pick, I mean, based on his production, he probably should have been in the SEC, but the reason he wasn't is because he's kind of a one-trick pony as a pass rusher, had a really couple of poor workouts after the season ended, and these lingering concerns about the stenosis he had in his spine back in 2009. You know, there are players who've played with it and been fine, but I think long-term durability is a concern with him. But knowing the Steelers, they just seem to sit back and pick great football players every year. This guy will be a force, especially in that 3-4 defense. So he'll start out as a backup, work his way into the rotation, and they may have gotten a good football player. It just remains to be seen. A little bit of a gamble.
Meanwhile, number 18, San Francisco, from the Dallas Cowboys, move in and pick up Eric Reed, the free safety out of LSU. And, you know, when you look at this deal, Dallas traded its first-round pick, number 18, to the Niners for the Niners' 31st pick in the first round and the Niners' third-round pick at number 74. What do you make of this, Hub?
Well, you know, Wayne, this is just the rich getting richer. The Niners came in with 13 picks, more than anybody else in the draft. They could afford to give up the extra number 3 to go from 31, where they weren't going to get a starter at safety. They weren't going to get the defensive tackle they wanted. And Eric Reed and Kenny Vaccaro, who went at 15, you've got the two best safeties as prospects to come into the draft in the last 4 or 5 years. Reed is a day one starter, may even be an upgrade over Deshaun Goldson, and they just didn't pay that much to come up and get him.
Eric, the Giants, in what some people say is a bit of a surprise, select Justin Pugh with the 19th pick in the first round out of Syracuse.
Yeah, a versatile offensive lineman can probably play 4 positions, center being the only spot he's not really projected to, but I don't ever see him as a left tackle. I think he's going to start out as a right tackle in his career. Short arms, though, that's something that I think a lot of people kept him out of the, you know, first round on their boards, because he only has those 32-inch arms. That's short for a tackle. That's why a lot of teams projected him to guard. You know, this is one of those picks that you really can't doubt Jerry Reese and company, because their first-round percentage has been very, very good in recent years. So, you know, this is a player I think they liked a lot. They felt safe with. They liked the coaching staff up there at Syracuse, and they made the pick. I don't know if it's a home run, but it certainly could be a stand-up double.
With the 20th pick in the 2013 NFL Draft, the Chicago Bears select Kyle Long, guard, Oregon.
Notice the lack of a reaction from anybody, because, again, when we talk about controversial picks, now I'm going to be a little more measured in my response here than I was working for 670 The Score, the all-sports talker that's number one in Chicago. Kyle Long is a guy who started 4 games at the University of Oregon. He was on the team for 1 year after transferring from Saddlebrook Junior College. He's a freak of an athlete at 6'6", 317 pounds, got the great wingspan. He ran the 4.940, the third fastest offensive line time at the combine. But you can't use the 20th pick on the draft on a guy who had 1 year of major college experience and started 4 games. This gets back to this problem of when you're drafting athletes instead of football players, you end up with great athletes who sometimes can't play football, and you can't mess around with these first round picks that way.
All right, let's go to 21st in the first round of the draft. Cincinnati gets that productive tight end out of Notre Dame, Tyler Eifert. You know, you pair him with Green, you give Andy Dalton another weapon in that Cincinnati attack, Eric. This seems like a very good productive pick here.
You know what this is? This is a kind of a cocky pick by the Bengals. This is them saying, you know, we had other needs, but we're going to take the best player available because we think we're close to a Super Bowl. It sounds crazy. It's the Bengals. We have to put it in perspective. But for me, they made this pick because they felt like, let's just get one more weapon. Let's help Andy Dalton out. Jermaine Gresham's a free agent after 2014. All of a sudden, they've got a healthy two tight end attack that almost rivals the New England. I'm not saying it does, but it's right there. And one little tidbit, guy, I was at the Notre Dame Pro Day. The guy working Tyler Eifert out was Jonathan Hayes, the Bengals tight end coach. And it was hard for him to hide his smile. I went over to him afterwards and said, what'd you think of the kid? He said, I'm not saying a word about him. And you could tell he liked him from Jump Street.
We're dissecting the first round of the 2013 NFL Draft. Vikings get busy. Falcons move up when Pro Football Weekly continues after these messages. We are back on this NFL Draft Weekend edition of Pro Football Weekly. Along with the publisher and editor, Hub Arkish, and senior editor, Eric Edholm, I'm Wayne Larrabee. The Atlanta Falcons, picking 22nd in the first round of the draft, selected cornerback Desmond Trufant, who has NFL bloodlines, and he'll come in and, you know, Eric, he'll be expected to replace Brett Grimes in their secondary.
Yeah, I think that's the expectation. I mean, my only question is, do they have to move up from 30 to 22 to get him? I mean, I think in their minds, you know, they felt like this is the player that they wanted to be sure they can get. They feel like they're three or four players away from a Super Bowl. They were close last season. But my question is, only two cornerbacks are off the board, Dee Milliner and DJ Hayden at that point. You know, you probably could have gotten somebody of commensurate talent, maybe even Trufant himself at that 30th spot. So maybe a bit of a luxury trading up to get him. And I only had six interceptions in 50 college games, not a playmaker. That may be a little rich for the 22nd spot.
Well, the Minnesota Vikings would start getting real busy on this opening draft night. With the 23rd pick in the first round, they take a guy that Hub Arkish, a lot of people had going in the top 10 easily, and that is Sharif Floyd, the defensive tackle out of Florida. Is this great value at 23?
To me, Wayne, it's the best pick of the first round, and it comes under the heading of I'd rather be lucky than good, because I just don't know anybody who saw him, you know, outside the top 10. And I realize that the mock drafts are a lot of media people. You know, our Pro Football Weekly Draft Preview book, it's a book and it's a guide. We're not drafting, but it's probably the most respected work out there. And we talked to, you know, half the scouts in the league, if not more, to put this work together. This is not a media hype. This kid was a top 10 prospect. You look at Warren Sapp, you look at Tommy Harris. These are the two guys who defined the three technique in the Tampa 2 that Leslie Frazier prefers to play. There were a number of teams. I still don't believe that with Monty Kiffin going to Dallas that the Cowboys traded out of 18 and left him there, and for the Vikings to get him at 23 right now, and again, now we'll grade it in 2 years, but in terms of getting value for the pick, I thought this was the best pick of the first round.
And now Indianapolis with the 24th pick. Interesting pick here, Eric, at home. They go for Bjorn Werner, defensive end, Florida State, out of Berlin, Germany. This is a guy with some upside, but probably still more of a developmental project.
Yeah, and I don't love him in a 3-4. You know, some of the moves that they've made this offseason have been a little bit curious to me. Guys like Eric Walden, some of the offensive linemen they brought on, and now Werner, who I like as a player, but almost universally I think people felt like he was a 4-3 defensive end. Now he's probably going to stand up opposite Robert Mathis, I should say. And they obviously probably see some comparisons to Ryan Kerrigan in Washington, the transition he made. I think you could say these are similar players coming out of college, but I just don't know if Werner has the foot speed, the quickness, and the reaction time that's needed for that 3-4 OLB spot.
Meanwhile, the Vikings then picking once again at number 25. They go for a cornerback hub with the selection of Florida State's Xavier Rhodes.
Yeah, I think Rick Spielman had a pretty good night for himself. Now, anytime you get three first-round picks, you're expected to get, you know, some good football players. We'll see if they play well in the NFL. But value in the spot you're picking. He was definitely better than the 25th best player in this draft as a prospect. He's got great size on the corner. And one thing that you always hear people talking about in the NFC North, when you've got to deal with Calvin Johnson twice a year, Brandon Marshall twice a year, Jordy Nelson twice a year, you've got to get a bigger cornerback with some size and some strength and some athletic ability. And in terms of the corners in this draft, when you talk about the bigger corners, Xavier Rhodes was the first choice of a lot of teams.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Vikings, three picks in the first round. We'll talk about their third pick coming up in our next segment. The Green Bay Packers picking number 26 go for a defensive end, Dayton Jones out of UCLA. And the one thing he gives them, Eric, is a little more height on that defensive line. He's 6'4", and can go after the passer a little bit from the interior.
And if you flip on a game tape of him at UCLA, you see him playing over the center, over the guard, over the tackle. He did a lot of different things. You're right about that height and that length. And, you know, if you're going to pay Clay Matthews the big money like you did, you might as well protect the guy. You might as well use somebody in front of him to do the dirty work. And I like this guy because he's versatile, and he can do some twisting and stunts. And he's a guy who I think will get into the backfield, maybe not for huge sacks, but for tackles against the run, for losses. So this is a pretty good pick, I think, by Ted Thompson and company.
27th pick of the first round. Houston Texans, DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver, Clemson, Hub.
You know, Wayne, I got a hunch Eric may not agree with me on this one, so I'm going to give him a chance to do a little point-counterpoint. I look at this pick. Had the Texans not taken a wide receiver, the world might have come to an end. I mean, everybody knew that was what was going to happen here. And so they're there at 27, and every single one of them except for Tavon Austin is on the board. Now, Hopkins, he's an NFL player. He's 6'1", 214. He's got 33 1/4-inch arms, 10-inch hands, which are meat hooks for a wide receiver. He's a 4'5", 40 guy. The only issue I have here is I kept hearing, Eric, that they want somebody to take the top off the defense. He's not going to do that. He's probably a pretty good number two wide receiver, but he doesn't give him that vertical threat that I thought they were trying to find.
Yeah, he's not a burner. He doesn't, you know, the knock on him is that he doesn't separate, but this is somebody who I think can absolutely make those catches in traffic. A great Z receiver opposite the X with Andre Johnson. Johnson can get back to running those big routes. He can be their, you know, their go-to guy on the one side, and Hopkins, a great chain mover on the other. You know, 4.57 doesn't scare me. You watch him on tape. I see a poor man's Reggie Wayne. I thought this was an inspired pick at 27.
All right, coming up, the back end of the first round of the NFL Draft when we resume on Pro Football Weekly. We continue with our NFL Draft edition of Pro Football Weekly, and we've moved to the back end of the first round of the 2013 NFL Draft. Picking 28th overall, the Denver Broncos select Sylvester Williams, a defensive tackle out of North Carolina. And Hub, when you look at this prospect, this guy's solid in a lot of areas and appears to be a very good pick at this stage.
You know, Wayne, if Sharif Floyd at 23 was the best pick in the first round, I thought this was the second best pick in the first round. Now, they wanted in Denver a pure pass rusher to replace Elvis Dumervil. They didn't necessarily get that, but I think in Sylvester Williams, you've got the first prospect I can ever remember who I think can play anywhere on the defensive line in any defense. I think he could be a 3 technique. He could be an anchor tackle in the 4-3. He could be a 1 or a 5 in a 3-4. They're going to play a 4-3 in Denver, and I don't know if he's going to be the anchor tackle or if they're going to try him at defensive end and plug him right into Dumervil's spot. He's more of a natural inside disruptive force. But Eric, I love this kid. I had him the top ranked defensive tackle on the board behind Sheldon Richardson, and here he is at 28.
Yeah, I see him as a nose tackle. I see him playing in a 0 or 1 technique. That's when he seemed to do his most damage in college. And, you know, it wasn't maybe their biggest need, like you said, but this is a pretty good football player, and they didn't really need to do anything. They just pick him, and they'll find their pass rusher, maybe a Tank Carradine or somebody like that lower in the draft.
29th pick in the first round. Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots are holding it. They decided to trade it. They trade out of the first round. Minnesota pays a pretty good price, guys, when you consider they give up a second-round pick, the 52nd pick overall, a third-round pick, number 83, fourth-round pick, and a seventh-round pick to move back into the first round. And from New England, the Minnesota Vikings select Cordarrelle Patterson, the wide receiver out of Tennessee. Hub?
Yeah, a little unusual for Belichick after what he's done the last few years. He came into this draft with only 5 picks. Well, now he's got 9. And when you add a second, a third, and a fourth, that's pretty good value, realizing you're at the bottom of the first round. As far as the Vikings, again, they filled a tremendous need. Now, Cordarrelle Patterson, unlike Sharif Floyd and Xavier Rhodes, is a lot more of a project. But he's got that great wide receiver body, frame, athleticism. And one thing he did prove at Tennessee was, with the ball in his hands, he is a really dangerous weapon. The problem with him is he's got to learn to run routes. He's got to get the ball in his hands, and he's going to take a little more work for the Vikings. They paid a significant price for him, but as the 29th prospect in the draft, I like this pick too.
Yeah, I think he's a special kid, especially in kickoffs, maybe even punt returns as well. And look, if wide receiver coach George Stewart has put up with Percy Harvin and helped him, you know, try to become a man, I think this will be a cakewalk compared to what he had to deal with Percy. I mean, Cordarrelle Patterson, the character concerns not nearly as big as what everybody said.
You know, and the other thing is a kick returner. I mean, you know, you lose Percy Harvin, this kid comes in and does that job fairly well for them. That'll be a big upgrade for the Vikings in terms of what it could be this season without Harvin. In St. Louis, the 30th pick of the first round, the Rams had traded down with Atlanta for this pick. Alec Ogletree, the linebacker out of Georgia. Hub, a little baggage with this kid, right?
A little baggage, and the perfect spot to take that luggage to, because if anybody knows what to do with it, it's Jeff Fisher. I mean, look what he did last year with Janoris Jenkins. And Ogletree, once you get past the baggage, I think everybody agreed, a unique athlete who can go inside or outside at linebacker in almost any scheme. He kind of completes the puzzle for the Rams on that front seven on defense. Now, again, I'd be worried about it if it wasn't Jeff Fisher, but you go all the way back to the Tennessee days and what he's done in St. Louis in his first year, he isn't bothered. He apparently he researches the baggage. He tries to make sure he knows exactly what he's dealing with, and he said before the draft he had spent time with Ogletree and that he wasn't worried about it, so I think it's a great pick for the Rams.
Yeah, it just concerns me a little bit the more they dip into these guys who are kind of knuckleheads in college like Janoris Jenkins. But like you said, Fisher known for kind of molding these guys. And, you know, they really didn't have a linebacker at that spot. I mean, they're not going to play him inside. He'll either be a Will or a Sam. And Rocky McIntosh is gone. I think he fits in well on that strong side.
Well, and you know, when you take a look at the 31st pick in the draft, the Dallas Cowboys from the 49ers select Travis Frederick, the center out of Wisconsin. This was a pretty big surprise. Frederick had been falling on some of the, I guess, the off-season charts, so to speak, and the testing aspect of it. But this is a pretty smart, sharp kid out of Wisconsin, graduates with a degree after his junior year.
You know, Wayne, I suspect that Jerry Jones is a freak of modern medicine. He must have feet that automatically regenerate every time he shoots one of them off. Because this is a bizarre deal. You trade down from 18 to 31 when there's great players at 18 that you need desperately on the defensive side. I agree the Cowboys had a screaming need on the offensive line. I firmly believe they could have gotten him with their second round pick, and some people think they could have gotten him in the third round. So, you know, maybe he'll be a good football player for him, but drafting strategy just to add that third round pick, this doesn't make sense.
I'm right there with you, Hub. I couldn't agree more. I thought this was a terrible move. Thought they had one of the worst nights of any team in the NFL. They just looked unprepared. You know, they could have had Eric Reed, the safety, big glaring need at that position. They could have had Floyd at 18. They move down, only get a third-round pick. That is light on compensation. And then they end up drafting a third-round type of talent. I'm not saying Frederick won't be an anchor. But you're talking about a guy who's extremely slow-footed. I think he's, you know, strictly a center, maybe a right guard. It just seems like a bit of a luxury pick there. They could have gotten better talented offensive linemen, or they could have had Frederick in round two or round three. I just don't get the pick whatsoever.
Baltimore with the final pick in the first round of the draft. Matt Elam, the safety out of Florida. He's a compact 5'9". It's one of a smaller safety hub in the middle of that secondary.
Yeah, this is pretty simple, Wayne. They had to do it with Ed Reed leaving. I never challenge Ozzie Newsome in the draft. Elam was the third best safety on the board after Vaccaro and Reed. But no mistake, folks, this is not Ed Reed. This is Matt Elam.
Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is just ahead on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor, Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish. Hub?
You know, Wayne, there are a couple things about the draft that to me are tried and true rules. Now, I grew up in the NFL business at the feet of Jim Finks, the legendary Hall of Famer who built four Super Bowl teams in Minnesota, the 85 Bears. He brought New Orleans into the competitive world of playoff football. And Jim Finks told me time and time again, you draft offensive and defensive linemen, you build your foundation, you will be able to compete, and you go from there. In that respect, what a great first round of the draft, what a great draft this is. But secondarily, his second rule of thumb, you draft football players. And if you can find football players who are great athletes, that's fine. But you draft football players. When you find athletes who weren't productive in college or who you're trying to project somewhere where they haven't been, you are taking huge risks, which you can do in the fourth, fifth, and sixth round, but you don't do it in the first, second, and third round. I thought one of the stories of the first round of this draft was the number of teams that were reaching and projecting and saying, we're going to do this with this guy, we're going to do that with that guy. Now, sometimes those guys turn out to be Pro Bowlers, Hall of Famers. Sometimes you get lucky, but more often than not, it's a bad idea, and there was a whole lot of it going on in the first round of the NFL draft in 2013.
Thanks very much, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. The coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates in the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkish and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.